Today on MovieWise, we talk about The Grand Seduction and How to Train Your Dragon 2. It's time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
Third podcast in a row of recording.
Yes, very patriotic of us on July 4th.
On July 4th.
Yes.
And happy birthday to Yazdi. It is your birthday this week.
Yes, yes.
And once again, your two nieces are with us. They're observing Movie Wallahs. I feel like we have a live audience here.
I know, it's nice.
I don't hear enough stomping of the feet or applause.
I know.
Yeah, they're being very well behaved.
Yeah, they should do the wave every once in a while. A wave with two.
So we have two movies to talk about today. The Grand Seduction and How to Train Your Dragon 2. That's a mouthful, isn't it? That's probably the most syllables in any movie title that we'll have this year.
Yeah, why don't they just call it How to Retrain Your Dragon? Or How to Train Your Dragon Again?
Yeah.
Something. Be creative.
It should be called Dragon Boy or something like that. How to Train Your Dragon.
I wouldn't want to go and see a film called Dragon Boy.
So yeah, you're the problem. So let's start with that one then.
Okay.
I'll do a quick intro. So basically, it is the sequel to the very highly acclaimed How to Train Your Dragon that came out, I think it was a couple of years ago, 2012. We did cover it on Movie Wallahs, and if I recall correctly, we unanimously loved it. It comes from the studio DreamWorks and had a release on, I think it was June of this year, so we're a little late in reviewing it, but it's one that we couldn't catch a screening of. We ended up seeing that one as civilians, so we don't always talk about movies that we see as civilians on the show, but we thought this one was worthwhile talking about. And basically, it's a sequel to the movie. The premise here is that now man and dragons get on very well in the town of, what's it called?
Bork.
Thank you. So the town of Bork is now no longer plagued by dragons. They, in fact, embrace dragons as part of their lifestyle. And everyone is doing all fine and well until Hiccup, with his dragon Toothless, encounter a strange land they're exploring and mapping the world around them now that they have dragons and they can get around, and they encounter a number of dragon trappers, and the plot starts to unfold from there. So I don't really want to talk too much about the plot. I think it's somewhat spoilable. The movie stars Jay Baruchel, Gerard Butler, America Ferrara, Jonah Hill, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Craig Ferguson, Kate Blanchett, I think, in this movie. It's written and directed by Dean DeBlois, who was also the writer-director of the first movie. So, guys, what did you think of How to Train Your Dragon 2?
So, I absolutely loved How to Train Your Dragon, the original, and Toothless. I mean, I want Toothless. I want Bumblebee. I want...
From Transformers.
Transformers, and I want my own Toothless. Clearly, this is made by someone who, as we said before, loves animals and understands animals. Although I really enjoyed How to Train Your Dragon 2, there was something missing for me in this movie, and I think it was the fact that it didn't seem like an ensemble movie. It seemed like the Hiccup movie, and I don't like Hiccup that much to carry the whole movie as a character.
Yazdi.
So my response is a magnified version of Rashmi's. Not only do I think How to Train Your Dragon, the first one, is a good animated movie, I think it's a great animated movie. I think it might be one of my all-time favorite animated movies. I mean, the first time I saw it, I was truly to my core shaken, like emotionally shaken, like devastated. And then I watched it again on television twice, and it still retains that emotional power. And there's something about, you know, that movie's themes about, you know, trying to find good in a long considered enemy, and trying to, there's this whole thing about man versus beast that the first movie captures so beautifully. Anybody who's had a pet will completely identify with it. So I really think of that movie very, very highly. And along those terms, this movie just cannot possibly measure up. And I think one of the big missteps, I think, for the second movie, it's a very entertaining movie. It's very well made. It's very watchable. I would recommend it. But I think one of the big missteps that the movie makes is it goes for too much movement. There's so much action. It starts off with this big dragon race, and the movie is so frenetic the whole time, and it never, you know, there's some pretty tragic events which happen in the movie, and even then the movie doesn't dwell on them long enough, so it doesn't let the emotionality kind of sink into the movie. Mm-hmm. Whereas the previous one was more meditative, it was more thoughtful, it was more emotionally stronger, and this one just seems like, you know, somebody who's had a bunch of, you know, sugar frosted, you know, Wheaties, and it's just bouncing across the wall. It's just too hyperkinetic for my liking.
I mean, I would agree with that sentiment, but I think from what I can tell, and we'll talk about this, I hold this movie, I think, in slightly higher esteem than the both of you, because I enjoyed this one a great deal. I think the movie goes to some very dark places, and somewhat unexpectedly so. You're right, it's not as emotionally wrenching, I think, as the first movie was in places. And, you know, the man-beast thing is an area that was done particularly well in the first movie. But I think towards the end, this movie does get there in some places. And, you know, I really don't want to spoil this movie, but there's a couple of very tragic, dark events that happen towards the end. But there are also some real moments where you get behind the characters, and I was right along with the movie for that part, especially the finale, even though I guess it was a little bit more traditional in terms of an animated movie. It was going for that almost that Lord of the Rings type, you know, epic battle at the end. But I think that's what they intended to go for here, and they made a very different movie to the mm-hmm. first one, and I admire them for that. And the talent on display in terms of the way the story is told was brilliant for me. So I really enjoyed this.
So, you know, there are movies that show, you know, the struggle of someone accepting who they're supposed to be. And I think that's mm-hmm. what this movie started out like. So Hiccup is, you know, destined to be the chief of the town, and he doesn't want it, clearly. You know, and the whole point was he was different. He was alternative. He was original. But the way it went in realizing that arc just didn't have any depth. It was so shallow. And it was probably because of all of the action scenes. And it had like a B story and a C story. And then even a D story with this kind of like a romance that didn't quite play out. I didn't get it. We jumped 5 years, clearly. We went from them being teens and going through puberty and accepting who they are as people. And now Hiccup is 20 and all of his friends are 20, but they were more like, it just tonally just didn't make sense to me. I just didn't get it. I was really disappointed.
When you think about a person who is unwilling or unable to take on the responsibility that is being thrust upon him, that can make for a very strong story arc. I mean, you know, King's Speech did that.
The hero.
So beautifully, the hero's journey, you know, he's the reluctant hero, if you will. And I agree, in this movie, you know, it just, when he finally does take on that responsibility, it doesn't seem like he struggled much with it. It just, like, he seemed like at some point he just was ready to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie kind of ran out of time. And that's mm-hmm. the issue that I think you're alluding to, is that this movie crams in a bit too mm-hmm. much plot mm-hmm. into a very short running time. I mean, it's an hour and 40 minutes. Rashmi, I think you pointed out it actually felt like a lot less than that.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of plot elements thrown in here. You know, there's the family side of things, there's the dragon side of things, there's the, you know, the big enemy threat that mm-hmm. is in there.
Two
and
of
then
them.
There's the Hiccup story.
Yeah.
And so you're right. I think it's overly ambitious, and maybe doesn't give enough time to develop those storylines in the way that we all want to see them. But for me, that wasn't as much of a problem as I think you guys had with it. I recognize that, whoa, we're going here and then going there. But I was along with it. And I think it depends on how much you connected with Hiccup, because unlike you, Rashmi, I really like Hiccup as a character. I think he's that young boy doing some very quick growing up, and you know, they're in an environment, in a world where that's required of him. And I bought that. I bought into that. And I went on that journey with him. So if you didn't make that connection, maybe the movie's not quite as effective. Because I think you were perhaps looking for more of the animal lover side of things. So How to Train Your Dragon is very successful at exploiting that interaction that we have with our animals. If you have a pet, like you say, yes, if you have a horse, a dog, a cat, any kind of animal that lives in your world and is essentially part of your family, How to Train Your Dragon really honed in on that emotion that you have and played you like a fiddle. This movie didn't spend as much time there. I think it did towards the end. It went back to that, but not. I mean, it wasn't about that, which the first movie really was.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you look at it on a macro scale and you look at the plot should be all about relationship. Every single part of the movie, other than the big battle scene, is about Hiccup's relationship with someone and, mm-hmm. and many, many of them. And so I think given it's about that, it doesn't feel like that at all.
It's not about dragon training either.
It's not about dragon training. No, it's not.
Which is beautifully original in the first movie. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, but then they weren't going to change the title. But again, I think the fact that it's at its core, you're exploring this young boy or young adult's relationship with many different aspects of the world that he lives in, that just didn't come across for me.
Yeah.
How about you guys? Did you, because you kept asking me what I thought about it. I'm speaking to summoners. What did you think of it?
I liked it. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. I mean, I agree with his premise about, and yours as well, that they could have done a little bit more, a little less action, but I really liked it. And I kind of teared up in a couple of scenes. I did. So I think it was effective. I did like it.
Yeah, it's a very emotional movie. And
maybe, go on, please.
No.
I mean, maybe it was expectations because we didn't get to see this movie when it was screened originally. And we all saw it as civilians after the movie was released. And by that time, I mean, I read a lot of reviews. That's the only thing I read online. And I read, this movie is
92.
It's like, yeah, it's reviewed
like
exceptionally well,
I think.
And almost every reviewer keeps mentioning that the movie is very dark. And I expected this movie to devastate me even more than the first one did. And it just seemed very shallow to me, or very quick and very, very eager to move on to the next thing. And maybe if I hadn't read those reviews, maybe if I'd seen this cold, I would be a lot more impressed by it. But I walked into it expecting a very strong, emotionally pulling kind of movie, and it didn't turn out to be that way. So, you know, maybe you didn't come with those expectations and it did have the desired effect. It moved you to tears. This one, there was not a single tear shed for me. Not that that's how I judge movies, whether it makes me emotional or not, but maybe it's a matter of expectations.
Yeah, and I think we're making out like it's a bad movie, and it's not a bad movie. It's a very good movie. It really is a good movie, but it's just not the great movie that How to Train Your Dragon was.
In essence, it's its own worst enemy. It struggles by comparison to its prequel.
Yeah.
Okay, let's sum this one up then. So, Joe, you go first.
So I enjoyed this movie a lot, and like I just said, it the only downside to this movie for me is that it isn't as effective as its predecessor, and it crams a little too much in it. It's overly ambitious. I feel like there was enough almost in here for two films. They could have explored a lot more, but nonetheless, I really liked it, and I think if you're a fan of the original, even if you're not a fan of the original, I think this movie doesn't really... You don't have to have seen How to Train Your Dragon to enjoy this film. So I would say, you know, a strong, easy 8 out of 10 and possibly a 9 as far as animated movies this year goes. I mean, I really had a good time with this.
I do acknowledge that it's very difficult to make good sequels. There are very few good sequels, particularly to animated movies. And so by that bar, I mean, independently, this movie stands very comfortably on its own. It's very accomplished. And as we've said, at the risk of repeating myself, this is a very good movie. It's just not a great one. And, you know, considering how highly I think of the previous one, it fails by comparison. So somewhere between a 6 and a 7 for me, I'll be generous and give it a 7 out of 10. Or I'll tip, not generous, I think 7 is a very worthy score for it.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about movies and sequels like Toy Story,
or Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, or even Kung Fu Panda, then this one had a bit of a hiccup. I did enjoy it. I was smiling. I probably had a tear in my eye as well at some point in the movie. But it just didn't reach the depths of greatness that How to Train Your Dragon did. And I love Toothless, but I don't like Hiccup. So I'm going to give this probably a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
That's disappointing for you guys, because I really had a good time with this one. But I think my expectations weren't quite as high. I don't know. I didn't feel good about the fact that they had made a sequel. So I walked in there with a certain level of trepidation. Even though I'd seen the reviews, I thought, you know, they're not going to be able to recreate that first moment between Toothless and Hiccup that made the first movie so great to me. Like,
and that's okay. I mean, I don't think any of us are looking for recreation, but we just said, you know, Toy Story 2, Toy Story 3, they got better.
Yeah.
And same with Kung Fu Panda. I mean, you're not looking for necessarily a recreation, but you're looking for some intelligence to push the story and push the boundaries further. Otherwise, why bother making it?
Yeah.
Other than the money, of course, but you know.
You know, it almost seemed like the movie was too afraid of boring its key audience. So it kind of kept being hyperkinetic. You know, it wasn't, it didn't want to stay quiet for too long.
Did you see it in 3D?
Yes.
Because we didn't. And I'm really regretful of that, because I think this movie, so many scenes were so obviously set up to be 3D immersive, expansive. And
but that wouldn't have changed the story.
No. But for me, speaking as somebody who enjoyed the film a lot, I think it would have added, horribly, an extra dimension to what we see.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it would have. It was a beautifully made movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, the visuals.
Oh, visuals were superb. I mean, that when you see the ocean, when you see the water.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that uncanny valley thing, Joe, that you always talk about.
It looks very
photorealistic. I thought that was actually filmed footage at one stage. I was thinking, oh my God, they've actually merged CGI and film footage. Couldn't believe how good it looked.
Okay, well, let's move on to our second movie of the week, which is The Grand Seduction.
The Grand Seduction is a film from Canadian director Dom McKellar, and it's written by Michael Dowse and Ken Scott. The film is based on the inhabitants of a small coastal village that is in Canada that is teetering on the brink of economic collapse. The town can have a factory set up to salvage the financial mess up, but in order to do that, they will need to convince the powers that be that their little town even has a doctor to call its own. So begins the Grand Seduction, where town inhabitants will go to any length to convince an experienced doctor to make the town his home. The film stars the amazing Brendan Gleeson, Taylor Kitsch, Gordon Pinsent, and Anna Hopkins, and it is based on the 2003 French-Canadian film Le Grand Séduction. How do you say that in French?
Le Grand Séduction.
Okay, Le Grand Séduction. I haven't seen this film, but both of you did. I missed the screening, although I did want to see it. Brendan Gleeson, I love him. I love him, love him, love him.
Okay, so this is a sweet, entertaining movie that is pretty unbelievable. But it's trying so hard that you can't help but like it. This movie, and this is one of Joe's terms, is the equivalent of being licked by puppies. This is 100% character story. And like the village it's set in, this is a small movie with a huge heart. I really like the movie.
Were you licked by puppies, Joe?
I wouldn't use that term for this movie. I mean, it is a little charmer of a movie. And I think for me, it's propped up by a brilliant performance by Gleeson. He never fails to bring it as an actor, and I think he's so odd, quirky, but heartfelt and has such conviction in, you know, you believe in this character's preposterous behaviors because of the way that Gleeson portrays him. But you know, it's kind of an odd film. Tonally, it feels like a very small movie. And I think, I don't know how big a production this was, but certainly tonally, it feels like, it reminded me most in tone of, there's a great British TV show called Father Ted. And it's set on an island called Craggy Island. And it's about a priest who lives on this small island. And he's a really quirky character and bizarre things happen all the time. It's a comedy. It's almost a slapstick, silly comedy. But this movie,
I think it might even be available on Netflix. And if it is, you should watch
it. Yeah, this movie has...
What's it called again?
Father Ted.
Okay.
This movie has many of these really strange, bizarre moments. This town is, like Reshmi said, unbelievable in many places. And the whole premise is really quite silly. They have to have a doctor in this town, otherwise, you know, the town won't get a factory and the town needs an economy. And so, you know, they're trying to keep the doctor there. And it's just a bizarre comedy. I think knowing now that it is a conversion of a French film, French-Canadian film. I totally get it because
it makes total sense.
Because if you know any French-Canadian comedy or, you know, it's any kind of European comedy, they can be very quirky. And
like
they,
Starbuck,
that's a great example. Really odd, bizarre thread of humor that doesn't quite work well in English, but it was a charming film.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Joe, you said it all. Good acting, I think, which is understated, you know, and it's set in this beautiful little town, which is supposed to be an island, but the people in the town say things like, oh, awesome, and a lot of
I couldn't figure out where it was set, by the way.
Oh, couldn't you?
Canada. No, because I that's the thing. I mean, for me, a lot of the language felt like it was Americanized. Like,
yes.
It felt like it was set in Britain somewhere, mm-hmm. some island off the coast.
I thought it was Irish, yeah.
And then people come in and they have all these Americanisms. I thought, oh my word, they filmed some of these scenes twice, one for an American audience.
Who could be?
And one, but obviously that's not the case. It's French, it's Canadian. So that
French Quebec, maybe.
But
yeah.
Really a strange term.
Yeah. I mean, and but you know, it just makes for this really heartwarming little fable. And it's something that, you know, can just keep you warm at night, I think. But I think, Joe, you said it, you mentioned Father Ted, and I had Father Ted written down here. Unfortunately, I think because it's so unbelievable, it comes off as a little bit disposable. And I think the fact that we've seen this program, Father Ted, it feels a little bit repetitive. You know, this could have easily have been an episode, an extended Christmas version of, you know, Father Ted holiday special. But it's really funny at times, and it's just incredibly sweet. I mean, I can't fault it.
I mean, what makes this movie for me was it has a really bizarre cast of characters. They all have... And you can imagine that in a small town that's cut off from the mainland, everyone gets these behaviors that are really bizarre in any other circumstance. They don't exist well.
And then they're inbred.
Yeah,
maybe.
You would think that, yeah. Right. But I mean, it's not implied by the movie. But there's these really strange people who have strange behaviors and strange things. And, you know, that's the miller who does the milling, and that's the sewing lady who does the sewing, and that's the cooking lady, and she does the cooking. And, you know, they're all almost like caricatures of characters put into this little screenplay, and their behaviors all kind of cue off each other. So you have a situation where this normal person is brought into this town full of abnormal people, and they're trying to get something from him, and so it's hard to know whose movie this was in terms of whose journey it was, because you know you kind of, most movies focus around one person. There's at least two main leads. There's the Brendan Gleeson character, and there's the doctor character,
Taylor Kitsch.
And I never knew who I was supposed to be rooting for in the situation. So you had this weird kind of, I don't know what this movie is really about other than the premise. And that's why it fell down a little bit, because it's just odd. But it is very funny in places, just not, it's not consistently funny.
No, I'm trying to look for that movie. Renee Zellweger did a movie where she's this, you know, highfalutin businesswoman, and she has to go to this little town and...
You don't mean Jennifer Aniston?
No. I'm trying to look for what the movie was. I think it's called New in Town. I think New in Town is the movie. It was from 2009. This is almost like that movie, but it's actually better than New in Town. I think New in Town, I actually caught that movie on the back of an airplane. It's quite a funny little movie, but it's got that same feel where it's kind of a duck out of water. And Taylor Kitsch's character is a duck out of water. And the water is Brendan Gleeson and his cronies.
Right.
I mean, I'm ready to sum this up. I mean, again, you know, I know why it's called what it's called, but I think it may be off-putting or misleading to some people. But fear not, when a movie tries this hard, you can't help but be seduced. 7 out of 10.
For me, the movie was just a little too quirky for me to make it a universal recommendation. I mean, I think if you have a kind of off-kilter sense of humor, if the bizarre is funny to you, then I think you'll get a lot more out of this movie. It's a very easy Netflix choice.
Yes.
It's a more difficult recommendation to say go out to the movies to see this. So, you know, my recommendation would be, you know, when you can see it at home one evening with low expectations, it's a very enjoyable film to watch. It really does win you over, but it's not great in any shape or form. And I'd love to see the original because I think it would work better in a foreign language. It just has that tone that you are more accepting of.
The quirkiness that you can accept.
Yeah, maybe some of the humor didn't quite translate. I mean, that's the other part. Yeah. You know, some of it is very odd culturally. Mm. That may not quite work well, but you know, a nicely done film. So
score.
I'm going to give it a 6 or 7. I'll go with Rashmi's 7.
Okay.
So
I want to watch this. I think
I'm going to say 6. Sorry, that's an overestimate. I'm going to backtrack totally.
Really?
Yeah. 6 okay. For me.
Yeah. I think
it's my kind of film. Yeah.
I think sounds like really my enjoy girlfriend, it.
Yeah.
It's
Gleason's sweet. Brilliant, and that's the thing. You watch, I could just stare at him, you know, doing his thing, his quirky bearded thing, all day long because his physicality is humorous to me.
Yeah.
All right. Mail at movieballers.com. Let us know what you think of these movies or our podcasts. Twitter.com/movieballers, Facebook.com/movieballers as well. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
Me as well.